Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, Kith. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
What I did hurt them, hurt people who shouldn't have to face intolerance and discrimination because of their identity. This is something that I deeply, deeply regret. Darkening your face, regardless of the context or the circumstances, is always unacceptable because of the racist history of blackface. I should have understood that then, and I never should have done it.
There you go. That's what Justin Trudeau has to say for himself. Three pictures now, maybe?
Three pictures.
I don't know.
That's a lot of photos.
Not looking good. Still, though, this is, I've played this cut already, too, but this clip, did you hear the Pete Buttigieg story earlier, Tony? Did you hear that clip?
About not being effeminate enough, that one?
And I'm sure you've heard this before in LGBT circles, that more masculine presenting men have more access. How different would it be if you were quote-unquote more effeminate?
It's tough for me to know, right? Because I just am what I am. And, you know, there's going to be a lot. That's why I can't even read the LGBT media anymore, because it's all too gay, not gay enough, wrong kind of gay. Like, geez, all right. You know, all I know is that life became a lot easier when I just started allowing myself to be myself, and I'll let other people write up whether I'm to this or to that.
Katie, you were emphatically nodding your head.
Well, it's true. I mean, I have a lot of friends in the community, in the LGBTQ community, and they were like, there's a lot of conflict between that community on what you identify as, what your sexual orientation is. Do you fit into the category that one of these letters represent? So, I mean, that's very true.
How can somebody from the LGBTQ community question how gay Pete Buttigieg is? I don't understand the rules of this game.
I don't. It's
right?
No, it's crazy. It's ridiculous. But you know what? I don't mean to speak for them, but I have been in conversations with people like Gabe Pfeiffer and Chris Arps that have been told by groups and or callers that we've had on shows that they're not black enough.
Gabe
has
said that.
Black enough.
Lord mm-hmm. have mercy.
Hey, Lord have mercy. Like, what do you need to? You either are or you aren't. You're gay. He's no, gay. The man's gay. So
let's talk about
how do you not be gay enough? Like, what?
Let's talk about the E word there. Enough. According to whom?
Who?
Like, give me a break.
Yeah.
There's nobody on the other side of the gay question, the black question, the woman question, the millennial question, the whatever question, where somebody else gets to determine if you're adequate. You're too much of a jerk.
Yeah.
Well, and then
that doesn't make any sense to me.
If you're splitting hairs all the time, how in the world can you come together and create this strong, organized community that you want so badly? If you're sitting there and you're questioning the gayness of someone else, as Pete Buttigieg was just pointing out, how are you creating and how is it beneficial for your community? How do you stand right. strong with one another if that's the if that's
it's,
what's happening?
It's dumb. It's divisive. And And it really, it exists everywhere. I mean, it exists just...
Are you Republican enough?
Are you man enough?
For sure.
Are you woman enough?
True.
You know, like
true
it, that exists.
It happens.
Yeah, it exists with every group you can think of, but what is especially condescending and especially I think a group that you should be critical of is a group that is fighting for what they call equality. A group that is fighting for nothing but equality. We just want an even playing field. And then they turn on their own people in the group and say, you're not this enough. That's not equality.
Completely.
That's not equality. That's conformity. And that's my way or the highway, which is the exact opposite of equality. You can't fight both things. Why you can't fight for both causes.
I feel like we're at this stage in 2019 where we're always trying to top the progressiveness of another person. That's what we're determining. How progressive in any way, shape, or form are you compared to this other person?
Well, that's the question I was going to ask that I think is a very important question to ask. What's the point? What is the point of questioning Pete Buttigieg's extent of his homosexuality? Pretty sure that there's a qualification there and he's met it. He's married to a man. What is the point of accusing somebody who is black who maybe doesn't think the same thing about you? What is the point of questioning your blackness? What is the point of questioning my femininity or whatever it would be, yeah, if you want to suggest that because I don't believe that it is a women's rights issue when it comes to abortion. I think it's a human's rights issue. And if you look at the people who ran the women's march, I'm not wanted there because I'm not woman enough, I guess,
right,
to go there. What is the point? The point is control. And the point is to provide control on one side and to take the control away from someone else. And it actually has nothing to do with the fact that the person is black, with the fact that the person is female, with the fact that the person is gay. It has to do with the thoughts that are in your head, but they actually use your color against you, which is called racism. If you're going to use my gender against me because I am somebody who believes that a beating heart inside the womb of a mother should have the absolute same right to live as the mother who is carrying that child, and you're using my gender against me because I have that belief, you're a sexist. I mean, you become exactly what it is that you're publicly trying to defeat in the name of equality. And it's bologna sausage, as my mother would say.
I like it.
It's case after case after case of identity politics, which we use to win political elections, but we really use it to demean other people who think differently than we do, and to try to not win an argument because you have the facts on your side, because you have a more persuasive case to against somebody else. You win an argument by scaring the other side into shutting their mouth, into not showing up for the argument. They don't show up, you win. Every election that we have been having here, in the amount of time that I've been paying attention to elections, which the first one that I paid a lot of attention to was Bush Gore, which is where my eyes started to open up. I was 16 or 17 at the time. My eyes started to open up to actually what was taking place, and I paid more and more attention as I went. What really happens here is we are suppressing thought. We are suppressing ideas. We are suppressing diversity of thought process, and we are trying to frighten people into a groupthink that is controlled by whoever has the power and whoever is the most persuasive by way of fear. And that is the most non-classically liberal thing that you can be. I mean, Tony is a libertarian. I would suggest to you, and you correct me where I'm wrong, that the idea of being libertarian, which I think is a much larger part of the Republican Party today than it has ever been, the idea of being libertarian is it doesn't matter how I feel about your personal lifestyle. It doesn't matter if I don't think that weed is good for you and you should be smoking it, which was the topic we talked about all day yesterday. I'm not going to do it in my house, but right. You don't worry about what I do or don't do in my house, and I won't worry about what you or don't do or don't do in yours.
As long as you're not hurting other people or breaking any laws, you do you, and let me do me.
And that's classically liberal. If you look back into his in decades ago, people wanted to be free to make decisions for themselves. They wanted to, I mean, like, good grief, free to do drugs, free sex, you know, free love. That was the idea of, I guess, my parents' generation. And that was as progressive as you could possibly get. You look at the same political group that voted along the lines of those kinds of freedoms back then. You look now, and if you look to the left, they want to control everything you do. They want to make the healthcare decisions for you because they want to, they dress it up in a pretty little outfit that makes you feel like they're here to take care of you. Let me ask you a question. Are you asking Elizabeth Warren to take care of you? Or would you like to be empowered to take care of yourself? Would you like to be able to choose to have the lowest out-of-pocket expense you can in your paycheck? Because you take good care of yourself and you don't need a lot of medical attention. You're blessed with good genetics and you're a healthy person. And if I get into a car accident, I want to make sure that I can afford the coverage that I'm going to need. But other than that, not so much. Maybe you're somebody of childbearing age and you know that you are going to want to have a kid and you want to pay higher premiums. But when the baby comes, you know you want to be able to not have that astronomical bill down the road. Maybe you're somebody who is in your 50s and all of a sudden you're on blood pressure medication and you got a little bit of arthritis creeping up on you, or maybe some aches and pains that you didn't have before. And you want to make sure that you have prepared adequately for that by saving hugely in an HSA. All of these are different decisions. Maybe you're 60 years old and you've never been healthier than you are right now. Every single individual listening right now has different circumstances that cannot be covered by a cookie cutter Elizabeth Warren promised and provided healthcare system. That's not what you want. You want to be able to take care of yourself. But unfortunately, what these Democrats don't understand is that the way that you do get to provide for yourself, the way that we can use our assets as a nation, our assets are our people, and we need to equip our people to provide for themselves. We need to make an economy where jobs are plentiful, where wages are higher, where taxes are only as high as they absolutely have to be to make sure that we can get to work safely and we can live in a country in peace where we know that when we lay our head on our pillow at night, we are going to be safe. And like Tony was saying, as long as you're not doing anything to step on my rights, which is the other place the government needs to come in, is to make sure that contracts are honored and that we don't infringe upon each other's right to pursue that happiness. Where else does this government need to be involved? Well, watch a Democratic primary debate and you'll see there are a ton of problems facing this nation, and the government is going to be there to solve every single one of them. And every time they use that F word, and I'm not talking about Beto, I'm talking about the word free. Every time they throw that F word out there and tell you that this is going to be free and that's going to be free, check the other Democrat on the other side of the stage. Just reach it in your back pocket, because none of it's free. You will have to pay for the security that Elizabeth Warren is so generously providing you for free, that Bernie Sanders so graciously wants to give you, because it's a right. It's a right that you're going to have to pay for. If you're going to pay for it, you should have some say in that. Don't you think? Don't you think? I certainly do. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to speak with Dinesh D'Souza. We're going to ask about how the Democrats that are running for office for presidents want to impeach Kavanaugh. They want to have a Supreme Court nominee opportunity right away, and they're going to do it by getting rid of Brett Kavanaugh. Can you believe this? It's pretty shocking. Dinesh D'Souza with us when we return.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I've said this before, very simply, I never thought Kavanaugh should be on the bench, and I still don't today.
Chuck Schumer just weighing in there. I know you're all shocked to hear that, but the Kavanaugh circus continues on, unfounded as the accusations may be by the highest of profile publications. That doesn't seem to matter anymore, and very excited to have our next guest on the show. Dinesh D'Souza, award-winning filmmaker of Death of a Nation, joins us now. Dinesh, so great to have you on the show today.
Hey, great to be on the show.
So when you hear Chuck Schumer say that he never thought Kavanaugh should be on the bench and he still doesn't today, you can't be too terribly surprised by that statement, right?
Not at all. But I think what should surprise us is the kind of ruthless willingness of these characters to seize upon dubious reasons to try to yank this man off the bench. In fact, it kind of mirrors what they've been trying to do to Trump. I'm sure Schumer didn't like the outcome of the 2016 presidential election either, but it's one thing to say I don't like the outcome, and another thing to say, look, I'm going to use all these nefarious and underhanded schemes to try to undo something that was actually done lawfully through the democratic process.
You know, I've watched Death of a Nation, and I just think it's absolutely must-view video documentary that you've put together that when I'm watching your film, and I've watched it many times, I have to, like, pause it and sit and soak it in because there's so much information that just makes so much so clear for Americans who are watching this, and it feels as though Republicans live in a different reality than Democrats do. And one of the things that you talk about in your movie Death of a Nation, also in your books The Big Lie, among others, is how that's kind of purposeful, that there is kind of a thought control that goes on with far-left progressivism to control words, our vocabulary, the way we consume information. It's a very purposeful thing.
Yes, we have, through the media, an effort to establish conformity in the way that we think and speak now. And then we have, through academia, the academic left, the progressive left in academia, an attempt to establish conformity, a kind of preferred narrative of American history. Now, it's a very distorted narrative. It camouflages all kinds of things. It hides all kinds of crimes perpetrated by the Democratic Party. So to give you, now take a small example. In 1860, this is the year before the Civil War, out of approximately 4 million slaves in America at the time, there were approximately 10 to maybe 50 that were not owned by Democrats. In other words, almost all the slaves in the United States on the eve of the Civil War were owned by one party and not the other. And yet this is all smudged over in the history books. In fact, to my knowledge, there's not a single textbook, there's not a single show on PBS or the History Channel that has ever divulged this simple, irrefutable fact. And so this is just an illustration of how the left has pushed inconvenient truths under the carpet. They're not teaching them to young people at all.
Yeah, I think it's such an important reality to understand for people who are trying to watch the news and understand how you can just flip a channel and see something so impossibly different based on what sort of media you choose to consume. Another consistency that we see across the country, here we're in St. Louis, but in Baltimore, which was highlighted recently, even by the president, is the consistency in Democratic leadership. Democratic leadership that wins election after election and telling you what's going to happen if the other guy wins. If the Republican wins this race, then all of these bad things are going to happen. But the poverty-stricken areas run by these Democrats, it never changes over the course of decades, and the Democratic leadership holds. How do you explain that?
Well, I explain it sort of this way. You know, while the Republicans emphasize a ladder of opportunity, the Democrats emphasize what can be called the rope. They're sort of like they're standing on a building, and they let down a rope, and they say to poor people and to minorities, hey, hang on to that rope. I'm going to pull you up to the top. And then they pull you up, but only halfway, and then they hold. And so suddenly you realize, wow, I'm too high from the ground to let go, because then down I'll go, and yet no one's actually elevating me out of poverty. I'm now completely dependent on these guys who are holding the rope. I'm beholden to them, and I sort of have no place to go. So there's a kind of learned helplessness that the Democrats have introduced among these, almost you can call them captive populations, and they are politically beneficial to the Democrats, although not a whole lot is done to relieve their condition.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a middle ground where they seem to be stuck, and neither side seems to be that appealing. I would say the president has done a lot with his economic policies, his deregulation of many things to try to do that one thing that raises all boats. The economy soaring the way it does right now, job availability, where employees are a hot commodity, and wage growth. Do you think that the economy under this president and the way that he has led this country in office for these 3 years might allow those people who live in lower income areas to see the benefits of what this president's administration has to offer?
Well, to a degree, yes. I do think that in some ways, certainly a rising tide is going to lift a lot of boats. But it's also true that there are these pockets in inner cities, not just in the black areas, but also in the Latino barrios, and there are white areas as well, where the problem is that you need a sort of package of ingredients to fix the problem. First of all, no businesses are going to locate in areas that are have high crime rates and no security. So the irony is that you have the war against the cops and all this sort of stuff, and the cops will then retreat out of these terrible areas and sort of leave them be, because if they go there, they're called racist, and so they don't go. And so as a result, these places become very dangerous. It's difficult for businesses to conduct business. So you need a combination of security and opportunity. And then, of course, training. You need education, because in some sense, what's the point of having all these jobs available if the young people graduating from school and sometimes college don't have the capacity to fill these jobs? They don't have the skills, the knowledge. So the education systems are broken down in these. So it's a kind of ecosystem, a dysfunctional ecosystem that the left has created and is kind of happy with, because it delivers 90% of the vote into their pocket. So if Trump can figure out a way to break that cycle, the effect of it would be politically cataclysmic.
We're speaking with Dinesh D'Souza, the award-winning filmmaker of Death of a Nation, also an author of a whole bunch of must-read books, on Twitter at Dinesh D'Souza. I want to ask you about these Democratic candidates to win the nomination to take on Trump. The last debate, which I watched, they illustrated a bunch of problems facing the United States of America, ones that I think that in some cases you'd have Republicans agree on the problem. But the solution for these Democrats is always provided by government, and only if you elect these Democrats. For instance, Beto O'Rourke was saying that our country was founded on slavery in the 1600s. And I guess he's making the case that if you elect Beto O'Rourke in 2020, he's finally going to take care of this 400-year-old problem. I mean, what kind of arrogance and elitism exists when an entire party suggests that all of these problems can only be solved by the greatest thing this country has to offer, its government?
Well, first of all, there's a lot going on in this statement. Beto is probably picking up on the New York Times' so-called 1619 project, which is very cunning. Let's think of what they're trying to do. They're trying to basically say America from the root, from the beginning, was sort of founded on slavery and white supremacy. Now, in 1619, at best count, there were exactly 20 slaves in America. So the idea that they were somehow fundamental to the economy, you know, it's nonsense. So the great plantation system that sustained slavery in the United States was a product of the 19th century. It wasn't until Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin in 1793 that the cotton plantation system, if you will, began to explode. And interestingly, in the early 19th century, which is to say in the late 1820s, a new party was founded, a.k.a. the Democratic Party, to be the defender and apologist and sustainer of the plantation system. So, interestingly, what Beto O'Rourke and the New York Times are trying to do is shift the blame for slavery off of the Democratic Party, where it actually belongs, and to push it on to some, you know, the pilgrims in 1619, they're the true initiators of this. No, slavery exploded in the 19th century. That's when it became central to the Industrial Revolution and to the American economy. And so there's a cover-up going on here, a cover-up in the interest of the very party that poisoned the wells and is now pretending to show up as the water commissioner.
Yeah, it is very disconcerting and a true understanding that they don't feel that this country inherently is a great country, certainly that it needs to be remade. I want to ask you one last question before we let you go. We're speaking with Dinesh D'Souza. On the immigration issue, the president continues to push for a wall. He continues to push for immigration reform. I don't know that he's ever going to get that done congressionally, but you have a strong opinion on the immigration issue as an immigrant yourself, or from a family of immigrants. Do you think this president is going to be able to successfully convey his message on the need for immigration reform with the media pressure that he has, that is constantly labeling him as the racist because of what he's trying to do?
Well, so the political move here is that what the left is trying to do is blur the distinction between the legal and the illegal. And they're doing this because they want to make it look like Trump is, quote, against Mexicans or against immigrants. Now, he's not against immigrants. His wife's an immigrant. But what he is against is illegals. Now, the point about the illegals is that the illegals are not only an affront to native-born Americans, they're not just breaking American laws, but they're ultimately cutting the line and depriving people like me or my family or people from India, where I was born, from their place in line. It's kind of like a family that comes into Disneyland, they get into the line for Space Mountain, and they cut the line. And you're like, hey, get out of the line, I'm in the line. So the point here is that, you know, if you're born in Bombay, you can't swim the Rio Grande or jump over a wall or a fence. You have to stand in a very long line. And so my point is, let's all get in line. If you want to change the immigration laws, do that. But the very idea that we have a Democratic Party that's a party of lawlessness, pretending, if you will, that illegals are the same as people who have come here lawfully through the lawful process, I mean, this is really outrageous.
It absolutely is. I'd encourage everybody to check out Death of a Nation. I have it downloaded on my Amazon. And I got to say, Dinesh, on my way home from Disney World this year, my kids were watching Disney movies on their tablets, and I was watching Death of a Nation. It was a nice cleanse between the fantasy of Disney World getting back into the real world. It's a wonderful film, and we really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you so much. Yeah, the book, by the way, just out in paperback next week. So look for that as well. It's kind of a nice companion to the movie.
Yes, absolutely. Dinesh, great to speak with you. We look forward to doing it again soon.
Thank you.
Absolutely. On Twitter, at Dinesh D'Souza. And I'm serious. I'm sitting next to my 7-year-old daughter who was watching Princess and the Frog, and my son and my 3-year-old who she cashed out real fast. Mm-hmm. I think that they were watching Captain Marvel. And I'm like, I'm just going to pull up a little Death of a Nation. So you've got Dinesh walking through this documentary on my Samsung tablet there and showing pictures of, like, the protests after the election in 2016. And the way he walks you through all of these stories is, I mean, it's like you can't absorb the information.
It's overwhelming.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's just so spot on. It's Death of a Nation. Go download the video, buy the video. There's 8,000 ways to watch movies now.
You can get a DVD if you still got a DVD player.
Yeah, you can certainly do that. And read the book. I know that the books, I fall asleep when I read books because I'm usually tired. Movies I can get through. Mm-hmm. Watch it. Trust me on this. You will be very, very glad you did. It's Dinesh D'Souza's Death of a Nation. And it's always great to get him on the show here. When we come back, I'm going to play a little bit of Mike Leach for you. He's a college football coach, and I just adore college football season. Notre Dame fan here, mostly because of my husband. But we're going to go through, I think it's the Pac, was it the Pac-12? And a mascot discussion on which mascot is the supreme mascot. Nothing can be said the way college football says it at a podium. We'll have that when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to Annie Fry Show. Happy to be with you. Probably happier than Justin Trudeau was to be with you via press conference earlier.
That was a relatively long press conference.
It was really long.
Sorry. That was probably 20 minutes.
It spanned multiple segments.
What I did hurt them, hurt people who shouldn't have to face intolerance and discrimination because of their identity. This is something that I deeply, deeply regret. Darkening your face, regardless of the context or the circumstances, is always unacceptable because of the racist history of blackface. I should have understood that then, and I never should have done it.
So that was his response, among others, from the exposure of three separate photos, at least now, that have shown that he has worn black or brown face. We're distinguishing it now. I think it's all in the bad category.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't feel like an apology is that it carries the weight. Okay, let me put it to you this way. If what he did is as egregious as what he's saying it is, then why are you waiting for the photo to come out and be public to apologize in that fashion?
Mm.
If what he did was a really ignorant thing to do, and I say ignorant, and I don't know Justin Trudeau specifically, but there are people who have done this, who have engaged in this behavior, who were not aware of the cultural insensitivity that that carried.
Sure.
That's what ignorance is. It means you don't have the information that you maybe should have, but you don't, to make a better decision. So when you do realize that that was inappropriate, like, I don't necessarily want everybody, I don't want to come into work tomorrow on Friday and have like 1,000 celebrities and famous people be like, all right, well, here's my blackface photo and here's my black. Like, I don't really need that. I just think we need to definitely start thinking about how are we acting now. Let's not go back to 2001 and talk about how horrible our culture is in 2019 because it's something that happened in 2001. Let's understand that we have over time learned lessons collectively at the expense of certain people who over the course of time have been exposed, who have made bad decisions. Sometimes you make a mistake and a lot of people get to learn a lesson from your behavior.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think, that his apology was good. Do I think that he needs to be canceled or that he needs to step down from his position? No, because you did something dumb. You admitted to it. You said it was dumb. Okay. I think we all can believe that Justin Trudeau is probably saying, wow, that was an idiotic move.
Who among us has no flaws?
Right.
Who listening right now, like, how many people do you know have said, well, I could never run for office because XYZ?
Skeletons in the closet.
And those people might be fantastic people with really good ideas who could actually use some of their past experiences because they have learned from their mistakes. Gosh, America loves the comeback story.
Mm-hmm.
America, I mean, Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. He's no Groot.
He's no Groot, but he's all right.
Like, Robert Downey Jr. has had some struggles. He has had some problems, and he's one of the most highest paid actors now, and he's used his success since then, and also because of what he has learned from previous mistakes and substance abuse problems, he is arguably a better contributor to society because he learned a lesson the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
I just get real annoyed by all of the high horse sitting that we all end up doing and, you know, waiting for the opportunity to crucify somebody over a mistake that they made, which was bad. Like, when I say that, listen, perfect example. Justin Trudeau gets exposed for wearing blackface. If I ever decide that I would like to run for office after I get done doing this amazing thing from noon to three, which I would like to do in perpetuity, I am thinking in my head that my response today to this issue could be clipped and used against me in any time in the future. I could be 65 and running for mayor of Warden, Illinois. I don't know if they have a mayor. It's the first,
but this is hypothetical.
Let
world.
Me be the first female mayor or warden. I will ride in the front of the World's Fair is Prairie Town. Warty Gras.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's it.
I mean, you know, like, this could always come back to haunt me, so I have to pick and choose every word that I say here and just thread the needle perfectly so that somebody doesn't hear my words down the road and assume they know me, when you might be sitting here listening. You may never miss a minute of the Annie Fry Show. You might know me more than people who I've known my whole life because we hang out for 15 hours a week. Maybe you listen to me for the 30 minutes that you drive home because you get off at 2:30 and you catch me maybe for 10 minutes because you're tuning in to listen to the Dave Glover Show. And you're like, oh, this chick, she's not terrible. That's my goal in life.
She's good. She cute.
She cute. You don't need to do that.
She cute.
All I'm saying is we have a society right now that is constantly on watch to search and destroy. And nobody wants to participate in it. Everybody is afraid of it. We almost get scared into participating in the thing that we actually hate. And by doing that, we're scaring somebody else into being the same thing. Like, Justin Trudeau, are you sorry you did that? When was the last time you engaged in this behavior? What have you been thinking when all of these other people had their blackface photos exposed and you knew that you had this in your past? You got to think it's just a matter of time. You got to think that there is a moment when this is going to happen and you've got to be preparing yourself for it. Are you hoping that the rest of the entire context of your entire life is enough to combat one photo that will cause people all across the world to know how racist you are now? That's a terrible thing. Our actions have to speak for themselves. Our decisions on how we live our lives do have consequence and do carry weight into who we are as individuals, but we've got to be willing to look at the big picture. And we got to stop searching and destroying. And I don't think this Trudeau thing is going to be that big of a deal. I think Governor Northam proved that, yeah, this stuff is bad, but we don't have the attention span for it anymore to stick with it as much as we do. Thanks for listening today. Check out the podcast at radio.com. And we're inching closer to 10,000 likes on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Annie Fry Show. Stick around. Dave Glover Show up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.